This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
Is it over? Is it all over now? It is Carlin versus Joe, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80, your smart speakers. We are everywhere. The TuneIn app, the iHeartRadio app, you name it, you can get us. And that's the beauty of this show, Joe Fortenbaugh.
Fun times last night, was it not? Like the start of the season, fun times. That was a really good opening game to get people going. Terrible what happened to Zion late. We'll discuss that more in detail down the line today. But that was a highly competitive basketball game. The juices are flowing. The juices are flowing.
Absolutely true. Energetic, I would call it. And then later, a disappointment. Because that was a weak performance by your Golden State Warriors. Let's get into it. Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio. My friend, I look at the Warriors last night, and I think that this is not over because I hear Steve Kerr, I hear Steph Curry after a game in which they pretty much never really stood a chance against the New Orleans Pelicans and didn't have an opportunity at all in the second half of this game. And I listen to these guys after the game, and it makes me think nothing is over until they decide it is.
These guys are all still really damn good players. So hopefully we can re-sign Clay. Draymond and Steph are both under contract, so we're going to roll it back next year.
Could never see myself, not with those two guys. I understand this league changes, and there's so many things that go into it, and we're not going to play forever, but experience so much together. And at the end of the day, like, again, I know they want to win. I know I want to win. And
Joe, they're running it back, bud. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I can tell you that if that's the plan, we can go ahead and stop with any of the championship aspirations because that's not a championship team. And last night showed it. People will think, well, it's just one game. You're overreacting. No, last night was pretty symbolic. There was one constant throughout the course of the Big Three dynasty in Golden State, through the ups and downs of the injuries, through the Kevin Durant era, through the D'Angelo Russell era, through the Andrew Wiggins helping them to beat Boston era, through all of this, there's always been one constant. Little brother never got the better of big brother. Big brother being Golden State, little brother being Sacramento. That was the one constant. The Kings were always the Warriors' punching bag throughout that entire run. The Kings would give them fits. The Kings would play hard because they always wanted to show up big brother. But they were never capable of actually doing anything of substance. Last year in the playoffs, they had a chance. Steph drops the 50-burger on him in Game 7 and knocks him out. Klay's famous 37-point quarter came against the Kings. Historical performance after historical performance against the Kings. The fact that you were red hot down the stretch, went into the play-in as the 10 seed, drew the Kings, who were without Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter, had everything set up for you to go into Golden 1 Center and do what you've done for a decade against the Kings, and to not just lose, but to get your asses kicked and to embarrass yourself in the process, especially Klay Thompson going 0-for-10 in his possible last game as a Warrior, that is a sign, ladies and gentlemen. It's not just a loss, it's a sign. This era is over. If you want to continue trying to run it back with the same players, that's fine. Do not sell anybody on championship aspirations because that's not a championship team.
No, it's not. It's not in the least. And the era itself of winning championships is over, but I never hear teams at the end of their season speak as definitively about what's going to happen in the future as I did from the Warriors last night. I heard Draymond saying the same thing. I know ownership's going to do the right thing here and take care of us all, which is freaking laughable. I mean, honestly, you haven't been out there working for free, as Chuck said last night on the post game. I don't feel like anybody there thought this was over, and that's bothersome. You talked about Klay. Klay has the worst defensive rating of his career this season, and that only topped last year, which was the worst defensive rating of his career. He has the second worst this past year three-point shooting percentage of his career. He had the third worst overall field goal percentage of his career. What are we talking about here? What are we talking about here? And yet, when I listen to Wendy, it makes me think that we are going right back at it.
They're going to re-sign Klay Thompson, and they're going to probably get Klay to take a $20-ish million pay cut, let Chris Paul go. That saves $50 million. You lean in, then you can potentially sign a couple of small free agents. You lean into your four young players that you've got. They've got four guys in their early 20s who are, you know, key rotation players, and you bring it back. Like, do I think they're going to emerge with a team that's going to be favored to win? No. But they were better this year than they were last year, and that in terms of record, and that is with Draymond completely undercutting them for 20 games.
Yeah, but isn't that going to happen again? Because that's what happens. Like, things don't get better over time, Joe. Things don't get better. They get worse. And even if you're paying Klay $20 million a year, I could argue at this point, if you're doing the right thing by your organization, you're getting away from that and you're moving into the future to try to maximize what's left of Steph.
You can sell a championship to the masses. You can pursue a championship. And then in rare instances, you can do both. An example of both is Denver and Boston. They're selling their fan bases. They're selling the country, the planet, that they are pursuing a championship. And they're also actually doing it. They're backing it up. They have the talent and the belief that they can get the job done. And no one's really going to doubt that, right? Like, you might pick Denver over Boston, but I think we all believe Denver and Boston both have a very good chance of winning a championship. Then there are teams that are pursuing a championship, but maybe it's a year or two ahead of schedule, and they weren't really selling that to the masses. Look at a team like Oklahoma City, right? Like, they're pursuing a championship this year, but they weren't selling that dream before the year started. They were selling, you know, we're in a rebuild, we're taking steps forward, it's coming. And then there's the idea of selling a championship where you're not good enough to actually pursue it. Think of it in terms of, say, Phoenix, right? Phoenix is selling a championship with their big three. And I know they're out there and they're kind of hot now and they might get past Minnesota, but who knows if they're actually going to be good enough to truly pursue it down to the finish. I think a lot of people would believe that defensively they don't have what it takes. The bottom line is the Warriors might, because they saw this, they got a firsthand glimpse of this back in 2019, 2020 when they went 15-50 opening up their new building. Steph was hurt, Klay was hurt, and Draymond sat out a bunch of games. Selling a dream is better. Selling a championship is better than the idea of not having any belief whatsoever. And if you bring back Draymond, Klay to play with Steph, at the very least you can sell, hey, one last ride, everybody, one last ride.
But let me ask you, doesn't that just feel like picking the last pieces off the carcass?
I think they already know it's over. Like, they know, Joe Lacob's not an idiot. You bring these three back, you know you're not picking the last pieces off the carcass. You know it's done. Let me tell you something. Go back to that closeout game, game six against Boston in 2022 in the finals when they won. You take the big three, Steph, Klay, Draymond, 68 points, 24 rebounds, 17 assists, 43% shooting. Okay? You go to what those three did last night in a do-or-die game. You can cut the points in half from 68 to 34. You can cut the rebounds by more than half from 24 down to 11. Those three combined for 11 rebounds last night. And you can cut the assists pretty much in half from 17 down to 9. I have a whole list here of closeout games and do-or-die games they've been involved in since the dynasty started and what the big three have come together to produce from a points, rebounds, assists, and field goal percentage perspective. They've been big in just about all of them, especially if you go back to that Oklahoma City Game 7 when they needed to get by the Thunder in the 73-win season where they eventually lost to the Cavs in the finals. Their numbers have always been huge. Last night was laughable what those three combined to do compared to all the others. It's over. That production combined with the opponent that took you out, it's over.
Okay, here's the thing, though. The toughest thing to do in sports for any successful organization is to say goodbye to their fading stars. That's the toughest thing to do, especially for a GM, for a coach. You know that town. You worked in that town. Fans are going to scream and yell in most situations. I'm wondering if they actually did the right thing and decided to move on from it now, besides Steph, how is that town going to react? Are they going to lose a ton of fans all of a sudden? Doesn't feel like it.
No, they wouldn't lose fans, but they any either decision
they make. How much heat would
they
take? How much heat would they take?
They're going to take heat either way. If they say goodbye to Clay, people love Clay. 100% yeah. approval rating. And Draymond Green doesn't have the same approval rating, but he's more productive now than Clay is. So if you say goodbye to either, people are going to be upset. But in the same vein, if you run it back, they're going to be upset that you're yeah. not truly trying to win a championship. You can't win here. You just have to ask yourself as an organization, what's the priority? Is it making money and drawing fans? That probably means bringing the three of them back. Is it truly pursuing a championship with the best possible team? That would mean moving on from both those guys.
Pulling the Band-Aid off earlier rather than later is always the best play when it comes to these situations. It's Carlin versus Joe, presented by Progressive Insurance. And now, a list of things from Progressive Insurance. Home, auto, boat, motorcycle, RV, ATV. Progressive protects them all. Learn more about bundling at progressive.com. We got more play-in action tonight. We've got Miami and Philadelphia, the 8 and 7 in the East at 7 o'clock on ESPN. And then later on, it is the Hawks and the Bulls at 9:30 on ESPN. In addition to on ESPN radio, coverage begins at 9 o'clock. Then there's LeBron and the Lakers. Not dead yet. That's next. Carlin versus Joe, ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Carlin versus Joe. Pizza money alert.
Pizza, pizza.
Not a great night, not a terrible night. We were 3-2, but we didn't make any money because we went for the two-unit banger on the Warriors, and we all know how that played out. So we look to forge ahead. Play-in game number, I guess you'd call it 4 because it's the fourth of the 4 play-in games, but it's the number 2 game tonight. That would be Atlanta and Chicago. We're going to take the Hawks here, +3 against the Bulls, a price that if you're interested in playing, you might want to grab now because the market is starting to move to 2.5. Styles make fights. And stylistically, this sets up nicely for Atlanta. Nobody gives up more three-point attempts than the Chicago Bulls. They allow their opponents to shoot about 39 three-pointers per game. That's the most in the NBA. That is great news for Atlanta, who wants to jack up as many threes as humanly possible. 7th most three-point attempts in the association this year. All that's left is we got to get hot. Atlanta, +3 over the Bulls. Pizza money number 1.
Lakers win it 110-106. A gut check down the stretch in the fourth quarter, but the Lakers are the 7th seed.
You know, it was a gritty win for us, and we punched our ticket to the postseason, so it was a good win.
We'll start the work process of building out the game plan and go up there and give it our best shot. That's all we can do. We feel comfortable, though. We like where we are. We like where the spirit of our group is.
They made the right reads. Every time New Orleans went on a run, these guys time and time again stepped up and made big shots, and this is what kept the Lakers out of danger zone.
All right, Joe, literally in the last 90 seconds, we'll get to the Lakers in just a moment. There has been a little bit of breaking news.
Carlin versus Joe, breaking news.
This from Woj, but he's not reporting it. The NBA has announced this. They have leveled a lifetime ban on Jontay Porter for gambling. Lifetime ban on Jontay Porter. Of course, we know the story from a couple of weeks ago where Porter was allegedly, you know, sick at the end of a couple of minutes on the floor in one game where there was some suspicious betting activity on his under. That had happened with aggravating an injury in another game as well. So clearly the league had more than enough evidence to slap the lifetime ban on Jontay Porter right there for gambling.
And he gets nailed for this because of the legalization and proliferation of sports betting. I know how a lot of people feel about this, all right? I know how they feel. Sports betting's everywhere. It's in your face now. We literally just did a pizza money, like, leading into this. So perhaps the timing there worked out in unique fashion, but neither here nor there. But the rise of sports betting leads to more regulation, leads to more oversight. It makes it very difficult to pull something like this off. In order for you to have a prop go under, right? So in the case of Porter, one of the bets was under made three-pointers, right? He had to make fewer than 1.5 three-pointers. So he could knock down one, but he couldn't knock down two. That's where all the money was. In order for that to happen, you can't just not play because those bets are deemed no action. So you need to appear in the game. But if you just check into the game and then you check out, that counts. This was what tennis players were doing to fix matches. They would start the match, they might even win a set, and then they would, quote, withdraw due to injury. So the other side wins the bet. Here's how everyone catches on as to what's happening. There's always an exorbitant amount of money being wagered on these things, which normally wouldn't see that much money. That's how these guys get caught. Irregular betting patterns. No one cares about betting unders on Jontay Porter's made three-pointers. Do you know how much action a sportsbook takes on that regularly? Probably minimal. You might have a handful of bets, if any, for the course of 20, 30, 40 games. And then all of a sudden one night, dozens, if not hundreds of bets show up, massive limits trying to play this. And then the guy checks into the game and then, oh, he's feeling hurt or dizzy or sick. And then he checks out. That's suspicious, highly suspicious. And then it happens again a month later. Same thing. That's going to get you nailed. And that gets nailed because the betting companies, the regulators, see the irregular betting pattern. So good on the companies for speaking up on this. Sorry to hear it about Porter, but you can't make that mistake. It's very well known in professional sports in this country. If you're going to gamble, you're going to get in deep water.
Okay, so here's the specific statement from the league. The league's investigation found that prior to the Raptors' March 20th game, Porter disclosed confidential information about his own health status to an individual he knew to be an NBA bettor. Another individual with whom Porter associated and knew to be an NBA bettor subsequently placed an $80,000 parlay proposition bet on an online sports book to win $1.1 million, wagering that Porter would underperform in the March 20th game. Now,
that's not suspicious at all. An $80,000 prop on an unknown NBA player to not play well?
That's not suspicious. That's stupid. That's beyond stupid. I mean, look, this is why everybody that's going to scream and yell about the legalization of sports from this standpoint is only going to lead to it. No, it's not. It's only going to help it because everybody is going to be looking to put their guardrails on it. These sports books, as you were just talking about, they are not in the business of losing money. So when somebody comes and puts an $80,000 parlay on the under on Jontay Porter, who is a fringe NBA player at best, red flag. Holy crap. I mean, you talk about just pure stupidity on Porter's part, on the bettor's part, on everybody's part there.
Everybody who's been getting nailed for this stuff, it's pure stupidity. Calvin Ridley, with all his betting, like, it's on a phone. It can be tracked. Are we not aware yet that everybody's tracking us? The moment we all should have known that we're being spied on was the day we all woke up to a YouTube album on our phone that none of us had paid for or asked for. Do you remember that day?
YouTube, not YouTube. But yes, I do.
You too. Yeah.
Yeah.
You too.
I'm a YouTube fan, so I'm going to take umbrage to this. But okay. Yes, that's true.
You take umbrage. I'm going to move on with my life, and I'll meet you down at the intersection in a few minutes here. But do you remember that day?
It was absolutely. Like, what, 10 years I remember.
Ago? We all woke up, and it's like, why do I have a U2 album on my phone? Apple can actually do that. I wasn't plugged in. I didn't ask for this. I didn't connect. Boom. Right there, you knew what was going on. You can't bet. It's a rule. They make it very clear. And guys, hopefully this is a story to all of them that if they're trying to pull something like this, you'll get caught. You might think it's as easy as, oh, I'm just going to check out with an injury. It happens all the time. It's not that. It's the betting pattern. All right? If the average amount of money wagered on that prop over the course of 45 games is $1,200 across four people, and then all of a sudden $250,000 shows up across 400 people, and the bet hits because you suspiciously leave the game due to injury, that's going to raise some eyebrows. And when you do it again 1 month later, that's going to be enough for an investigation to be opened and then quickly closed.
One last thing about it. I love it. They didn't waste time. You're done. It's over.
Lifetime.
And it's absolutely dropping the hammer and letting everybody know that none of this is going to be tolerated, because I think sometimes it gets lost in all of this, Joe, that the most important thing in sports, period, is that we have to believe it's real, that we have to believe that the outcome is not predetermined. So for me, I give Adam Silver credit for not screwing around at all and tossing him from the league.
And they should make a big deal of this, too.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't one of those sliding
in. He should be out there making the rounds about this today.
Do not slide it in. And they're not doing this, obviously. But don't slide it in at 5 p.m. on a Friday and hope no one catches it. Get it out there in the middle of the day so that every radio show and every TV show talks about it. So that, more importantly than anything else, every player, every coach, and every official sees that if you try something like this, lifetime ban. That's how it works.
Carlin versus Joe, ESPN Radio. We told you about the Lakers. Do they have any shot whatsoever against the Nuggets? We answer that in just moments after I tell you about this from our friends at Indeed. Joe, it's the perfect time to gear up and connect to quality candidates. There's no better way to do that than through Indeed, the hiring platform that makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in the same place. Their interview tool helps you schedule and conduct video interviews right from your employer dashboard. Next to hassle, start hiring indeed.com/credit.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
You just heard Christine give the news. Jonte Porter banned for life by the NBA for this betting scandal. It's Carlin versus Joe, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80, presented by Progressive Insurance. Danny Green, ESPN NBA analyst, three-time NBA champion, joins us right now. And Danny, don't know if you had seen the news as of yet, but the news is just that Jonte Porter has been banned by Adam Silver and the NBA for life because of his involvement in this betting. Apparently passed along information that somebody else would then bet an $80,000 parlay on all of the unders on his performances. So just your reaction to hearing that a player gets banned lifetime for this.
Yeah, it kind of sucks, man. You know, at that age, being banned from a dream job that you had acquired and not be able to go back to it. But I think this is something none of us are surprised by. Adam Silver has to, you know, set an example, and it sucks to be that example. And he doesn't want people gambling and ruining the game. So this was one that was, I think, expected. But as a, from a player standpoint and from a fan standpoint for this kid, it's just a tough one to swallow. It's a tough pill to handle.
You know, with the rise of sports betting, the proliferation of it across the country, the apps, the states getting involved, the promotions, the commercials, you know, more people are doing it now than ever before. Now, because of that, the regulators are keeping an eye on this, and it's easy to identify when things like this are happening because of the irregular betting patterns. But on the other side, does the rise of this, do you think, lead to more of these type issues amongst NBA players?
I hope not. I'm sure some guys do their own gambling, like household gentleman style with cards or something like that. But, you know, this, I think, hope sets the tone and keeps players away from gambling on our sport and being involved in it. Because, you know, there's no place for it until, I guess, times change where the day is it's allowed. But I highly doubt that. I want the game to stay pure. So I hope this deters guys away from it and keeps guys, you know, from not messing with the game.
Danny Green is with us, ESPN NBA analyst. Joe and I are in the camp of the Lakers don't have much of a chance here against the Nuggets. What's your take?
I think they do. I think it's a different year. They have more pieces, a deeper team, and Denver's not as deep as Denver last year. You know, Denver is the better team in my eyes. I do think the Lakers have a chance. I still think this game, this series can go to six. So we'll see. We'll see if, you know, Lakers exerted a lot of energy to get to this point. They may have run out of gas, but the pieces they have are very good. If D'Lo plays the way he played last night, Austin Reeves, Gabe Vincent, all those guys come up and do little things and have a shot.
You were on ESPN Bet Live with me yesterday, and I asked you point blank, I like Zion going over 24.5 points. I think it's a legacy game. It's a big opportunity. I think he steps up. You agreed. You thought he was going to have a big game. And then, boom, he drops 40 in a monster performance, albeit a loss. We're now trying to sort through what the injury means, but what did you see from Zion, and what do you think moving forward? Has he turned a corner for his career?
Well, you know, gambling is a risky thing, so I wouldn't say he got lucky, but it was an educated guess.
Yeah,
that he'd have a way better night than he did the night before or previous to playing the Lakers. But they got a chance to get out and running. You know, they got out early on. I guess they started out good in the first quarter, but he had like 10 points a quarter. They got him involved. He hit a mid-range jumper. He got a couple of lobs. When they're playing at that pace, it's hard to stop him because he's so explosive. But they had too many turnovers. That's where L.A. got back in the game, took over the game, and then they lost a three-point line game. So L.A. had a lot of shots, threes, and when they made a run to come back, they made some, but prior to that run, they didn't make many threes.
Danny Green is with us, ESPN NBA analyst, three-time NBA champion. Last night, we see the Warriors go down in a quiet performance, to say the least, against the Sacramento Kings. Danny, as you look at the future of the Warriors, is it time for them to kind of move on from the combination that they have, or should they try to run it back one more time?
I think the fan and most of us want to keep those guys together, even though I hated, love competing against them, but hated losing to them and watching them win so many. But as a fan, you love the game of basketball, and you know you want to see, you don't want the story to end the way that is ending. So you want to see those guys stay together. But if they want to stay in contention or continue to win championships, they probably have to make a change soon.
As we transition to tonight's matchups, Philadelphia is going to take on Miami. Winner's into the playoff. Loser has an opportunity to beat the winner of the 9-10 game. You know, Philly had expectations before the season started, trying to make a run at a championship. Embiid gets hurt, so we kind of soften those expectations. But Embiid's back now, and they're playing well down the stretch. So what's a reasonable expectation? Should we be thinking to ourselves, yeah, Philly should find its way to the conference finals, or is that asking too much?
I think you're asking too much, especially with the short time given with their whole group. De'Anthony Melton being out and Joel only 8 games. I think he sat a game or two in that 8-game stretch. So I think a reasonable ask is second round with them getting, depending on the matchups too, right? They may end up playing Boston first round. So that may be a tough one, and nobody's expecting them to beat Boston coming off injury and the years they had. But if they can sneak into the seventh seed, they could possibly, you know, upset the Knicks. They could possibly upset some other teams, but I think Boston is a team that they need to avoid. But even then, I just said, with the season they've had, conference finals is a stretch. It's too much to ask for. I think, you know, second round is a good goal to have for them.
Danny, good stuff. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for a few minutes.
Thanks, Danny.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you guys.
That's Danny Green, ESPN NBA analyst, three-time NBA champion. Okay, you're a Sixers fan. What's your expectation?
That's what's so tricky about this, right? Like, coming into the year, I had higher expectations than I normally do because I thought it was going to be addition by subtraction. Harden's gone. And it's not so much a knock against Harden. It's just get rid of the drama. How can you expect to win a championship when you're constantly being distracted by all these other moving parts? Markelle Fultz, Ben Simmons, James Harden. Philly could never get that out of its own way, right? This year, it looked like they were doing that. Tyrese Maxey was going to step up into a bona fide number two alongside Joel Embiid, and boom, what was going to happen? And they looked good. They were drama-free. Everything was moving smoothly. And then, of course, Embiid gets hurt. So then we just basically look around and we say, it's all over. Now he's back. They're playing well. And most importantly, the East is weak. Outside of Boston, the East is weak. The East is vulnerable. I do think the Knicks are formidable, but they're down Julius Randle. So now I'm starting to get sucked back in, and that's what I don't want, Carlin. I don't want to get sucked back in only to get kicked in the balls yet again by this team, which is something that happens every single year. So I'm just in a holding pattern. I'm circling above JFK waiting for clearance to land.
So this to me has got to be frustrating when you look back, and to me there's one inflection point in all of this.
For this season or this whole era?
This era.
Oh, great.
And the inflection point was Tobias Harris over Jimmy Butler. I mean, that was just a horrendous decision.
Yeah, that's a bad one. There were several bad ones.
I mean, I would argue that if you had kept Jimmy Butler, you'd have a championship by now.
I mean, you know, but perhaps it's, I'm not disagreeing with you. Butler would be the far superior option. But I mean, wasn't the problem, it wasn't so much Butler versus
Simmons too.
Tobias Harris. It was Butler versus Ben Simmons.
Right.
Like, Butler and Ben Simmons weren't apparently getting along, so you chose Ben Simmons. I would also argue the idea of not only trading Markelle Fultz or drafting Markelle Fultz over Jason Tatum, but actually giving up picks for the privilege of making that mistake was quite a mistake as well. People forget, Philly actually traded up with Boston and said, look, we want to give you a Hall of Famer and a bunch of picks to draft some guy that's going to have some mysterious injury and never do anything. And Boston was like, okay, you know, we'll do that. And Philly was like, good. We were hoping you'd do that because that's how we do business.
As somebody who was working in Philadelphia at the time and was espousing the idea of drafting Markelle Fultz and applauding the trade at the time, I find that to be of very little consequence to what's gone wrong with the Sixers here.
Little revisionist history. I can understand that.
No, it's not revisionist history. It's just I choose to look at that and say, not a big deal.
Tatum's not that. I mean, Tatum does struggle in clutch situations in the NBA Finals and Conference Finals, while Fultz is, oh, I don't know. Is he even playing for Orlando anymore?
I mean, listen, looked at his stat line. Apparently you're not, because he had a good, strong 2 minutes the other day.
Jeez, what a pick. You can go through the history, though. If you go back to the start of this whole trust the process, we're going to lose a lot so that we can draft a lot of good players. Look at how many picks they swung and missed on. I mean, Jabari Park, there are so many top three picks that they missed on. They hit on one.
They hit three on centers in a row.
They hit on Embiid, and even that took 3 years before it got going.
Yeah, they didn't play for the first two seasons, and then in the third year, he played 30 games.
Just incredible. They missed on so much. And then, of course, like to your point, even when they weren't dealing with the draft, they were screwing up the idea of the Jimmy Butler. And then what was the other one? Who is it? Was it Bridges that they drafted and then traded on draft day?
Mikal Bridges.
For some guy who never even played?
Was a little Furkan Korkmaz in there? I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at what that trade was.
We'll look it up. It wasn't good.
It wasn't good. Whatever it was, it wasn't good.
Well, they also had the Brian Colangelo thing off the court.
That was a joke. That whole thing was a joke.
Oh, that was amazing.
He was neither the architect of this process, nor did he do anything to further it. He came in, did nothing, screwed it up, had burner accounts, and then got run out of town. Like, talk about a joke of a tenure at any job anywhere. That one almost takes the cake.
I've only had a couple
burner accounts. How much time can you possibly have on your hands to argue with trolls when you're the leader of a professional sports franchise and you wonder why you're not winning?
I have to tell you, just to make it about me, because it's what we do.
Sure.
I have never alienated an executive faster than I did with Brian Colangelo when I was in Philadelphia. Like, it took within a month.
Were you talking to him or were you talking about him?
About him and then to him. We had a contentious interview that did not go well.
Okay.
That I was proven right about because, you know, they were pulling a lot of shenanigans, but whatever. As somebody told me when I was going into Philadelphia, somebody in NBA league circles, nobody assigns blame better than the Colangelos.
I mean, Doc Rivers.
Fair. Fair. Carlin versus Joe, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80. Did another Philly team avoid drama this offseason with one move they didn't make? It's next on ESPN Radio and on TuneIn.
Barbasol Shaving Cream. You're looking good, America. You're shaving with Barbasol. Close Shave America, Close Shave Barbasol.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
I'll tell you what, you read about Bill Belichick today from Seth Wickersham and Jeremy Fowler on ESPN.com and what happened this offseason. It's not great, and I came away with it. Also, Don Van Atta was credited on this story. It's a really good deep dive into why Belichick this offseason did not get a job as a head coach, and I don't think he's ever coaching it again. Really, I came away with it feeling that way.
I would posture you never want to be the subject of anything written by Wickersham or Fowler. And that's not to knock them.
All Wickersham's been writing about is Belichick for the last 15 years.
But, like, that's
years.
The thing. Those guys are always on the really heavy, serious stuff.
Yeah.
And it's never like, hey, here's a story about how Bill Belichick won $2.5 million in a 50-50 raffle at the New York Yankees game. Like, it's always something really heavy, and those guys do tremendous work. That's the point here. But you came away from that thinking Belichick will never coach in the NFL again. Why is that?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, it's very clear that Robert Kraft still has some very open wounds. Because while publicly they have said that Robert Kraft, for anybody that called, gave a glowing recommendation, privately, it's clear he told Arthur Blank, you cannot trust this guy at all.
Why is that? Is it because of what happened with Brady?
It's because of what happened with everything. It's because of him being just a massive pain. And they said, quote, very, 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 three verys, arrogant in it. And also, just the idea that nobody believes that no matter what he says in being able to work with others, being able to work with other people picking the players and such, eventually you're going to have to turn it all over to him to do everything, because that's just kind of how it's going to work. You know, somebody who says what they have to say just to get in, and then they're going to do it their way. And there are people that believe he only wants to win 15 more games. So it might be you're going to turn over your entire organization for 2 years of Bill Belichick.
Yeah, the good news for any organization that's pondering the idea of hiring Belichick is flat out, you know what you're getting it. You know what you're in for. Right? You know what you're in for. There's no surprises here. You know that he's not going to work hand in hand with you. You know he's not going to defer to you. If you are hiring him, you are bringing him in, putting him in charge of everything, and doing what you can to support that. If you are uncomfortable with that, you are going in a different direction. And I think that's what teams like Atlanta found out when they were interviewing him. They realized not very pliable, might not work well with others, especially his non-handpicked guys. And as a result, this could be problematic. And that's smart business. That's smart business, understanding that. Understand what's happening. Stop trying to shape the world to what you want it to be and start working yourself within the confines of how the world operates. That's how Belichick operates, and it's not for you. Hard. pass. But if you're okay with giving him full control and letting him do his thing, then he might be the right solution for you because the guy is still a hell of a coach.
Absolutely he is. And that's the thing. Are you willing to put up with what you have to put up with in order to win? And that's what happened with Kraft the last few years. He wasn't anymore. And there was a general lack of trust on either side or belief in either side. Belichick, when you read this article, just basically continued to believe, hey, I've won 6 Super Bowls here, you know, and I've won 8 overall as a coach and an assistant. I'm sorry, I deserve some leeway on what we're doing, and I deserve to call the shots. And part of that's understandable. It's clearly understandable. Now, I do also come away with it with this. My biggest problem if you don't hire Bill Belichick is if it's because you're protecting your job. If you're somebody in that organization who is just going to the owner that is considering hiring Belichick and just saying, pushing, can't do it, games passed him by, all this stuff, you're doing it because you feel like you're going to lose your job immediately, that's a conversation that you have to have with the owner of like, hey, we know how this guy likes to do things. Are you going to shove all of us out the door if you hire him? It should be of an honest discussion as opposed to one that is just based in self-preservation, 100%.
Absolutely. But those guys you don't want as part of your organization either.
Well, they're a part of a lot of organizations.
They're a part of a lot. They're everywhere. And it's not just sports. It's everywhere. It's, yes. It's ego. It's human nature. It's not to say that it's unique to the NFL by any stretch of the imagination, but you don't want those guys either. If the decision-making process starts and ends with the idea of what is this going to do for my career, then that's someone that's not helping you win a championship. That's someone who's helping himself further his career, and then hopefully along the way you win a championship so it can also further his career. So the idea that Belichick doesn't coach again, didn't this article, you dug into this a little bit more than I did. Didn't this article mention some teams that could be in play?
Yes. Yes. It mentioned that after this season, 3 teams that you could look at would be the Eagles, the Giants, or the Cowboys.
The NFC East.
Yes.
What's the matter, Commanders? You don't want to throw your hat in the ring?
Well, Dan Quinn, so, and Adam Peters, Josh Harris, who owns the Devils, owns the Sixers, wants to have that same model that he has in place for those other 2 teams, a strong general manager with a coach who kind of follows suit. The Eagles kicked it around. There's no way, no matter how friendly Howie Roseman is with Bill Belichick, there's no way Howie Roseman lets Bill Belichick in that building. No way. There's been nobody better at self-preservation than Howie Roseman with the Eagles. And I'd also argue this, again, that the point was we're going to do this for 2 years of Bill and then be back and having to rebuild the whole thing again. The Giants, you got Dable, and Dable's clearly on the hot seat. I don't know that the Giants would hire Bill Belichick now. They may have 5 years ago. They may have 10 years ago. I think they certainly would have, but now, given everything that's gone around, I don't know that they would.
See, I think, to me, all these other factors are legitimate factors as to why you might not want them. I just think age and duration is what comes down to it. Maybe it has to do with the fact that he's only looking to beat Shula, and maybe he pulls the ripcord after that. But I'd be looking for a guy that doesn't necessarily have an impending expiration date, right? I'd want someone a little bit younger, just someone who, you know, hey, best case scenario, maybe it's a Mike Tomlin situation where we're doing this, a John Harbaugh situation where we're doing this for 20 years. Like, that'd be nice. Think about the organizational stability if you have something like that. I would be thinking along those lines. I'm not looking for a 3-year setup. I'm not looking for a quick turn and burn. I'd be looking for someone who could hopefully be around for a long time.
So I don't think the Giants would think about having to have somebody there for a short term and a quick fix and a quick win. I don't think the Eagles would think that way, but Jerry might. Oh. And Jerry and Bill are close.
Jerry's given up power?
I didn't say that. I'd said that Jerry would hire Bill if he thought he was going to win a championship right away, because the clock is ticking, my friend. Tick, 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 tick on Jerry.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much I know.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.